Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. I have one of the most amazing How to Love Your Neighbor stories that I just want to share with you today. You know, I've always known that foster and adoptive families, many of them, are some of the most giving and generous group of people I've ever been around. And I think after listening today, you may agree with me. So right after COVID shut down most of the Northeast, I read a quick news piece online which really grabbed my attention. The write-up shared about a mom and dad of three in New York who along with their kids and just some resources they had, were spending about 4 hours each day delivering supplies to families in need. Now, these families were really struggling because they were deeply affected by interrupted services that they needed, they depended on to thrive. And so I just had to know more when I began to read this story. It was just enough to probe my thought. I just wanted more information. And I knew there had to be an incredible backstory to this short release. So I was also confident that the Lord was crossing my path with a family that truly had a heart for the gospel. And you guys, I was right. So let me welcome and introduce to you Julie and Steve Rosati. Welcome, my new friends. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, it's so good to hear your voice. So I don't know which one of you wants to go first, but share with our listeners how you two first met.
Well, I'll go first. And so I was working at the local pregnancy center, and Steve, I noticed, had come in and offered to volunteer to paint in one of the offices that we were refurbing. And I saw that he was there on a Saturday and he was willing to just give and help the vulnerable women in the neighborhood by making a more beautiful office. And so I just started kind of getting to know him that way. And one day we had an open house at that center and he was there, and the event went on quite long, and we started to get hungry in the afternoon, and he offered to take me out for lunch, and I declined. I told him, no, I'm not going to lunch with you. But then he offered to take my roommate as well. So I was like, okay, so it's not really a date. I'll go.
I love it.
And so, yeah, we had a really nice time together at a Mexican restaurant. He's really funny. He used to be a police officer, and he told us all of his cop stories. And I was kind of falling for him already.
Oh, wow. You know, I've always told my kids, Steve and Julie, that you just keep doing ministry and the Lord will bring alongside your partner. Like, I believe that. Mm-hmm. And you guys are a prime example of that. You told me when we were talking one day that you not only sell yourself as married, but with a family one day. So just, if you will, Julie, just continue building that story for me, how the Lord built your family.
Well, sure. So when I was 24, I got saved and I had, you know, lived a life in the world before that. And so when I got saved, I just really wanted to commit the rest of my life to the Lord. And I even told God, I said, God, I would rather be single and chasing after you than be with the wrong person. And so as I got older, I still held on to that. But a part of me, really all of my life, wanted to have a lot of children and be married. But I never, it's odd because I never thought of having babies or having being pregnant. I just thought of having a lot of children around me at all times. And so then, you know, I met other guys along the way, but really nothing worked out. Nothing felt like it was really of the Lord. And mm-hmm. then when I met Steve when I was 38, he's really captured my heart. And I felt like he was the man that I wanted to marry. But one day I remember sitting and we were kind of just joking around, and I just asked him, you know, how old are you? And because I knew he was older, but he was so strong and fit and everything. And I just thought, wow, he really has me stumped. I've been spending a lot of time with him and everything. And he told me that he was 55. And I was like, whoa, like I was in a chair at my desk in my office, and it was after work, and I leaned back and it almost felt like I was going to fall out of my chair. I was so surprised because he didn't act older. Like, he didn't act that age to me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how I thought 55-year-olds would act, but he seemed a lot younger. And so then, like, the next thing I just blurted out of my mouth was, well, you want to have kids, right?
Wow.
And that's when he said, well, I would like to adopt, like, older children.
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought, wow, my heart, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, Steve, you'd always have that desire as well?
I did not, because I have actually two biological kids right now. My son is 31 and my daughter is 26. So even when I hit like 50 and my, 51, 52, I thought, I've already done this. My time is over.
I know how you feel.
Yeah, I kind of did that, been there, done that. And, and I'm older. I mean, I didn't feel old, but, you're up there. So, but I started changing my mind. Like, God got a hold of my heart. I was going to church. This is even before I knew Julie. There's so many kids in foster care who just languish in it, and they bounce around from house to house and maybe never even get to go with a family. So it was just a strong feeling that, wow, this is something I need to do. Now, of course, at the time, I was unmarried, and I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to do this or not,
Uh-huh.
And then a few years later, boom, I met Julie, and I thought, wow, maybe we could do this. And then when I found out that she didn't have any kids and really didn't want to go through the pregnancy part of it, she just wanted to have kids, I thought, wow, so God knows how to put one and two together and make three.
Isn't that amazing? I love it. So tell us, continue, guys, how the Lord, then, you're married, but you're not married long, and you step into all this. How did the Lord build your family?
So I really wanted to make sure, because a part of me was worried, like, now that we're married, because you do hear bad stories and where people change their mind, and things. So I thought, we better get right into these classes. So I started calling all around different places and asking, when we could start the classes. And I think it was about 6 months after we got married, we got right into the classes.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was fast. And then, a few months after that, we finished, but they have to do a home study, and, you have to make sure you have all your fire extinguishers and your physical and all those kinds of things. So it does take a little while, right, to make sure that they can place children with you. And so I remember them calling us. They called us in and said, would you like to come over to this residential facility and meet two girls? And he said yes, and so did I. We couldn't wait. We went and we played a couple of board games and saw the girls, and then we asked them if they would be willing to come to church with us when they come out and visit us, and they said yes. So we felt like, okay, we can work with these girls, if they're willing to come to church. And actually, the first day, the day we went to church, a lady got saved, and she went up to the front, and I hardly even see that anymore, like an altar call, and a woman went up and got saved and was crying. And so the girls saw all this.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just having conversations with them on the way back to taking them back to the place they were living at. And it seemed like, these girls are going to give us a run for our money, but we were willing, because, it was just Steve and I, and we just felt like Steve being a former police officer, I thought, okay, if it was just me, I don't know that I could have handled this, but since we were together and we had God, I felt like, we can try it out at least. And we did. They stayed for a year and a half, and it was fantastic with them. It was very difficult, but we don't have any regrets or anything.
Right. So your first placement was middle school, teenage?
Two girls. They were
9 and 11, I think. 9 and 11 or something.
Wow. Wow. And then, so did you take a break for a while, or did you just stay current and take the next placement, or how did the Lord move in all that?
No, we not only did we not take a break, they would call us all the time for to put kids with us for respite. So like, maybe they're not getting along with the family they're in, or
right,
they're having troubles, or maybe the parents want to go on a trip and it's not the kind of right thing to take the kids. So we had kids all the time, even while we had the two girls, we had kids. There was one July where we had, now this isn't the whole month, some stayed a few days, some a week, some a day or two or three. We had 17 kids in our house one July.
Wow.
In and out. It was quite the experience.
Well, there was your training right there.
Yeah.
So what,
right into the fire.
Yep.
What happened with the girls? So I want to tell you that the girls, so things were going very well. And in the agency was, it seemed like they were pushing for adoption because towards 2 years, they start trying to make a permanent placement for the kids. And so I thought we were going to be adopting them and possibly their two brothers as well. They were trying to kind of bring their brothers in little by little and see how we did with the four kids. And so it seemed like things were going in that direction. And then one day I got an email from the agency. When we got to the meeting, the girls were there for a family visit. They were in the same building. And they basically just told us quickly, like, look, you know, it wasn't a fault of our own and it wasn't our idea, but someone above us has decided that they just want to move the kids in 2 weeks. They're not going to be living with you anymore. You're not going to be adopting them. Boom. Just like that.
Wow.
Like it was a shock. It really hurt. It really broke my heart, honestly, even though, you know, I did have some reservations about how things might go in the future with the girls, because I didn't know about the mix, you know, with Steve and I and our house and everything. So, Steve, you know, he felt kind of relieved, you know, he was like, don't worry, like, it's okay. And I'm like, you don't understand, like, I was picturing baby showers, weddings, like, I pictured like a wife with these girls.
Yeah.
And so I was like really hurt, and he just said, don't worry, this is gonna work out fine. I just was so brokenhearted about the whole thing. I said, listen, let's take the next month off and go travel, you and I, because I like to travel. And I thought, we hadn't really had a chance to be together that much, because after we got married, we started foster care right away. And I thought, we'll do this. So then the very next day, I got a call on my phone, you know, hey, we have a boy and two girls, nice kids. And I was like, oh, I don't know, you know, like, I was so nervous. I didn't know, you know, and I called Steve, and I thought, he's going to say no. Like, we've had all these children this summer. He probably wants a break. Well, he said yes right away. He was like, yes, we'll take them.
Wow. Steve, you said yes after 17 children in 1 month?
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I can only attribute this to God, because if you would have told me then that I would – before that I would say yes to that, I would have said, you're insane.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I was at work, and because the girls had been away and we didn't have kids for like a couple of days or something. Anyway, we didn't have a lot of food in the house and we didn't have the beds made. So I thought, oh my goodness, Steve, you said, yes. I called the agency. They said, okay, they'll be there in a couple hours. So I called my mother. I was like, Mom, can you come help? Like, can you make beds? Can you go get milk? Because I didn't know, like, I wanted to make sure everything was set nicely. And so she went over, and also I wanted the kids to be able to meet a woman as well. I didn't want them to just show up at the house and just have a dad there. So they met my mom and Steve, and the workers, all the workers said was, they're good kids, but they curse like sailors.
Well, I bet that took a while.
You know, the first day that they were with us, this is before Julie even came home. So two workers brought them over, you know, from the foster care agency. They stayed for a little while and they left. And then one of the girls, Rose, said to me, do you have any milk? I said, sure, you want a glass of milk? And she said, no. Well, she does this like two more times.
Right.
So finally I said, you know, you can have milk. We have a lot of milk. She said, show me.
Oh,
so I opened up the refrigerator. Yeah. Now her mom, Julie's mom just stocked up the refrigerator because we knew they were coming. But our refrigerator is stuffed all the time anyway. So I opened it up. There's two milks in there. And she looks at it and she says, wow.
Yeah.
She said, do you have all this food in here like this all the time? I said, oh, yeah, that's nothing. Wait till you see it. And she was shocked because where she was from, you know, there wasn't always like that.
Yeah. You know, Steve, that's such a great point, because people don't realize children, like you said, she just wanted to see the food in the refrigerator. But food insecurities, we've talked about that on the podcast before. That's something we really need to be aware of, that food insecurities for these kids are real. And we have to, you know, do what we have to do to make them feel secure, that the food is not going to run out, that we'll have plenty. And just, you know, the basics. We'll have plenty of the basics. And here's a drawer where you can always get fruits and vegetables, or you can always grab a snack here, because we don't want food we don't want them to have to worry about food anymore. And so I love that, what your mother-in-law did in the milk story.
Yes. So these behaviors in these kids don't just change because their environment changes when they come to your house.
Right.
Especially Johnny, when we would put food on the table, when it was like time for dinner, we have a variety of things. The first thing that this child will do is he'd start grabbing things and sort of like, you know, putting them in his area, and he's got his arms around them like, okay, I've got my stuff now, you know, yeah. Nobody can take it. And now 2.5 years later, he does it a little bit here and there, nowhere near as bad as that.
Right.
But that's after 2.5 years. So, you know, these things just don't disappear right away. And you have to be really patient and understanding with it, or else, you know, you can get frustrated easy or think you're not doing a good job maybe when you really are.
Yeah, something we say a lot, Steve, is trauma doesn't tell time. And trauma changes the brain, and it takes a long time of building relationships, healthy relationships, and keep showing up and doing the same things every day that will always prepare food for you. We're always here for you. And, you know, your son's trying to retrain his brain, and it's a long process, a very long process.
Yeah. I'll tell you something else. We're in a different house now, but we were in a house that had a staircase that went up one way, turned to the right, and went up the rest of the way. And I would walk him up to bed every day. And for about 2 weeks, I would say, I don't understand what we're doing. He'd be on the same step as I'm on, but he'd be looking at the steps, like staring at the steps as we walked up. And I could not figure out what he was doing, but I didn't want to ask him. I wanted to figure it out because I didn't want him to feel funny or stop doing it. I wanted to know why he was doing it first. And so I kept watching this every day for like a couple of weeks. And then finally I caught it. The last day I caught it. He was making his footsteps, right foot, left foot, just like mine.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, wow, this is huge.
Yes.
This kid, that doesn't even realize it, is watching and listening to everything I do. So of course, when I mess up, guess what he's getting, right? And so now I mess up, and it makes me think of that again. And hopefully it makes me mess up less. I still mess up, but hopefully it's less, and you know, improving on it. But that was both amazing and sobering at the same time, because I thought, wow, this is huge. I mean, I feel like I'm under the microscope here, and I have to, it's like a lot of pressure, you know?
Yeah, it is. It really is. And it takes we have to give ourselves a lot of grace as parents, because they are looking to us. You know, some kids come into a home, don't know how to sit at a kitchen table. They've never had one. Several of mine would say, now, when's the next meal? You know, that's not a daily occurrence for them. And so just to think about your son putting his feet in step with yours, what a beautiful picture. You make me want to cry. What a beautiful picture of the Lord coming down in flesh and just walking with us in this world, walking into our brokenness and just putting his arms around us and saying, I'm here. And it's what you were doing for your son. And that is such a beautiful picture of Christ's presence in our life and the healing he wants to bring. So you guys started living together as a family. And I know there's a lot of adjustments. And I was teasing Julie on the phone, Steve, that I'll be praying for you because you're going to have like 3 teenagers at once. but how is life looking now as a family? Y'all have been together how long?
For 3.5 years.
Wow. And so the kids are 12, 13, and 14. Is that right?
Yes. And so it was amazing because we really, of course, always wanted, I mean, honestly, since the day they came, we wanted to adopt them. Fell in love with them. They were the cutest children, and they just, the way they called us mom and dad from the first day. So we were able to start looking at adoption 2 years later. And, I noticed the school year approaching and I started feeling really nervous again, like, God, please, we just really want to homeschool them. You know, public school had gotten really hard for them in the sense of, peer pressure and things. And, then the school told us, you know, we're going to be, we're not going to have a special class anymore for children with special needs. We're just going to put them in the mainstream classroom. So that would have meant sixth, seventh, and eighth grade for our kids. And to give you an idea, when we tested them in homeschool, they tested in first, second, and third grade.
Oh, wow.
So that would have been just so complicated for them, you know, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. And I was, you know, begging the principal while I was begging God, please, God, no. And so we started petitioning the court and everything for adoption. And I just kept praying, you know, please don't let the kids have to go to public school. And we kept hearing back from the lawyer, like, it doesn't look good. You know, your judge is on vacation and this and that and all these things. And so she said, look, you might as well forget it. You're probably going to have to wait till November. And suddenly, like, our lawyer said, I have no idea why, but your judge said September 4th is the day. And that happened to be the very first day of school.
Oh, wow.
And, it was such a relief. It was so fantastic. So September 4th, 2019, we were able to adopt the children. And right along then, Ashley stopped working at the job at the pregnancy center. And we started a new role with Save the Storks. And it's running the pro-life training center in Oneida, New York. And so we moved into, we were waiting on the house to close where the training center was going to be. And it closed in November. So we moved into a 9,600 square foot home.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, it was a really big house. It is a really big house.
So I know when COVID hit, you got a grand idea that you began to realize that people were not getting their needs met. And mm-hmm. these were people that you call vulnerable to abortion. What do you mean by that, Julie?
Well, honestly, okay, so backing up just a little bit, working at the pregnancy center, I know the needs of women 18 to 40 that are in like the lower income areas. And so they have great needs, and they're also highly marketed for abortion. So with the pregnancy centers, a lot of them having to close down because of COVID, our governor here in New York State said that they were not considered an essential business.
Wow.
But that abortion clinics were an essential business.
That's interesting.
My heart was ripped out. I just thought, oh my goodness, like, so abortion is wide open for business. Everything else at that point was closing down. All the programs that would help women were closing down, and the abortion centers were saying, hey, but we're open. We're here for you, you know? And my heart just broke, and I fasted and prayed, and I just asked God, what can we do as a family? What can the Pro-Life Training Center do to step in and meet these needs? So we went to a food giveaway, local food giveaway in an urban area of Syracuse, and put in some notes in there that said free diapers, wipes, free pregnancy tests. And my phone instantly, I started getting so many messages, like, and so we didn't want to just do deliveries of items to homes. We wanted to actually be able to mentor the moms and share the gospel with them, pray with them about their needs. So God sent me a lot of moms, women that I knew who would be interested in doing phone mentoring. And so we started the program just like that. And then to this day, we've had over 400 families, and we just keep getting more families little by little now, and reaching out. And so the children, their schools, homeschool, they do a co-op where they would go 3 days a week, but even that was closed down. So when they would have break from homeschool, like, you know, snack break and lunch break, they would actually go out and wipe down things that would get dropped off to our house. Once word got out that we were making deliveries, a lot of people started bringing things to our home. And so the kids would go out there with Lysol wipes, and then they would also pack the orders. So this gave them so much, you know, we heard from other families, you know, the kids were going crazy. They didn't have things to do. And we said, send them to us. We're so busy. The kids were really having so much meaning. Apart from their homeschool work, they were going out with us in the afternoon after they packed all the orders, and they would go and make drops. And they started making friendships with some of the moms, and we invited them to church. And still to this day, some of the moms go to church with us, and Rose and Johnny, especially, they really love small children. They babysit their kids in the back there. It's not really babysitting, but, you know, they try to keep them quiet during the prayer meeting and things.
Oh, I love it. That's such a great story. And you've been able to help over 400 families?
Yes. And we still get calls today from the hospitals and places that know. They say, well, listen, we know that you will. We've heard about you, and we know that you all will really bring cribs, like you say, you'll bring car seats. And it's amazing because the women that work in the hospital, they're not Christian. They don't know about the Christian element. They just call us because they know that we'll bring them resources. But so I'm so happy when they give me all these women.
So you take resources to the women, you meet the need, and then mm-hmm. you're able to follow up with a phone call and build a relationship with them.
Yeah, actually, we don't even meet the need until they've done a phone call. So as soon as I get the number, I give the number to the mentor, and she just starts in with a text or, hi, we'd like to make a delivery. We just need to talk to you first, see what else you need. So when they call, they say, you asked for diapers and a crib, but do you need anything else? Do you need a car seat? Do you need clothing? Do you need wipes? Then they list all these other things they can get, even food, hygiene supplies. And then after that, they say, and how are you doing? Like, you know, how are things going? How is your delivery or wherever they're at? The mentor will ask, you know, and then say, would it be okay if I prayed with you? And then she can pray the gospel with them and ask them, would you like a Bible? Would you like to have a ride to church? Things like that.
Wow, that is amazing. Oh, Julie and Steve, I love the story because I don't think you two, correct me if I'm wrong, had any idea what God was building when you two met at the Crisis Pregnancy Center. Am I right?
Yes, yeah, Sarah, definitely right.
Absolutely.
Wow, what a beautiful story. And, you know, as the body of Christ, if we seek out others and we find a way to meet that need, Julie, like you were just saying, and then we work toward building a loving relationship with those that the Lord brings to us, because some may not respond back to you, but those that do, when you're able to build a relationship, we can help empower others to seek support instead of yielding to destruction or to feel stuck in their hopelessness. And I know you have found that true there in what you're doing. And I know, Julie, it can seem big to people who want to start doing something like this, but the Lord provides what you need, doesn't he?
Definitely, definitely. Like when we offered these items, the diapers and wipes in the pregnancy test, I never expected to get like literally 40 texts, you know, do you have size 4 or size 6? Like, I did not have these items.
Right.
I was like, uh-oh, you know, like, this ended up raining a little bit more than I thought it was. And so, and it didn't stop at those 40, like, because then other churches heard, and they said, can you help over here, too, in this area? And so then we started, I just put it out on Facebook. I said, look, we started this thing, and so many people wanted to help, because they saw that it was an area that they could step in during COVID when so much hope, no one knew what the next day would bring, you know, back then, and how many businesses would be closed down. And so there were just so many people that felt, you know, I can help here. I can do this. And they would come even in the middle of the night, and still we'll wake up sometimes in the morning and our whole porch is full of everything. Like for Christmas, we had Jesus birthday parties. I asked the moms that we work with, I said, would you like us to come and we could celebrate Jesus's birthday? We'll bring some gifts for your kids, because we started getting so many toys that I was like, well, what would we do with all these toys? So then I got the idea, well, let's go celebrate Jesus's birthday. And so we've been allowed in homes, and then we have a birthday cake for Jesus, and we explain, you know, Jesus isn't asking for a toy. He wants our heart. He wants our devotion, our life, you know. And it's been so amazing. Like, you know, we bring Bibles in for the kids as well and pray with the families. It's been going great.
Wow. Just a picture that through the Holy Spirit, our families can be agents of his care and his healing. You know, his hands can control ours. You're a prime example of that. Our arms truly can wrap his care around others. And Julie and Steve, I just love your story. We're going to put information in the show notes how folks can hear more about what you're doing and how they could start that same flame in their area and start meeting those needs. But thank you for modeling this for us. Thank you for so candidly and lovingly sharing your story today. And thanks, just thanks for being with us. And give Johnny and Rose and Jasmine a hug from us. And I just love your family, and we're just so grateful for you guys.
Thank you so much for having us. It's a great opportunity for us to be able to share the story, not really for our good. We just want to be able to encourage other people, whether they're interested in adoption or helping pregnant women or even going on the street corner to witness, A lot of people think they can't do it. They think it's too hard. They don't know what to say, or they think their life has to be perfect. And if you wait for that to happen, you'll never do anything. So our motto kind of is just, you know, as Nike says, just do it. Just do it.
Yep. That's right. Just take that first step and do something tangible. I totally agree. And just the Lord just kind of takes over. And like you said, you wake up in the mornings and your front porch is covered. God did it. God did it.
Yep.
And he shows up every day. Well, thank you guys. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Lynette.
God bless you. Thank you so much.
As always, thanks for spending time with me today. It's an honor to walk this journey with you. So share it with a friend. And you can hear more of Julie and Steve's story on the Stories of Hope podcast, which will air later this month. For more information, check us out at sendrelief.org.
The world tells us our differences should divide us. But the gospel, it has a different story. Our mission, our calling, his command, is a mission that unites every Christ follower in a way that stands out, a way that doesn't make sense to the world. Join us June 13th and 14th at Send Conference to be refreshed and celebrate the church together on mission. A free event hosted by the International Mission Board and North American Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention. Learn more at sendconference.com.